Web streaming of 90.3 WPLN-FM is made possible by listener support and by Vanderbilt University Medical Center, the promise of discovery. Learn how you can support this service at NashvillePublicRadio.org.
From NPR and WBEZ Chicago, this is Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, the NPR News Quiz. I'm Carl Castle.
And I'm Peter Sagal. Back a century ago, when one part of our nation faced a crisis, the rest of the country went on with their lives in happy ignorance. But now in the 21st century, with all our modern technology, when crisis strikes one region, the rest of the country can pitch in by sending caring emoticons on Twitter. We'll ask who is thusly saved, plus the head of the Smithsonian Institution comes on, so we can formally present him with Carl's favorite sport jacket. And Carl Castle is unexcited about the upcoming Lincoln biopic.
It's probably going to be a bleeping musical or something. It makes me bleeping sick.
We'll ask what really isn't going to help us feel better. It's on our quiz right after this hour's news.
From NPR News in Washington, I'm Corva Coleman. It's been nearly a week since Superstorm Sandy hit the Northeast, and more than 2 million people still lack electricity. The storm damages worst in New Jersey and New York, where there are shortages of everything, food, water, housing, gasoline. New York Governor Andrew Cuomo says the federal government is rushing gas supplies to victims today.
There will be more of a supply of gasoline, and there will be more of a distribution. And there is, as we are now speaking. Today you'll see more distribution.
Mobile canteens are being set up in New Jersey and New York to feed people. It's better in Manhattan, where most power has been restored. NPR's Quill Lawrence reports residents are cleaning up, and some restaurants are reopening.
Lombardi's, north of Little Italy, claims to be the best pizza on the planet Earth. They cook with coal, so they kept it up throughout the blackout. Manager Gilbert Soto says he cooked up all his toppings before they went bad.
Honestly, I am excited of one thing, that I was open at the worst moment, that at least somebody have something to look forward to and say I can have a pizza.
Some of the normal bustle is returning to southern Manhattan after a long week, but millions are still without power, water, or heat across the region as recovery efforts continue. Quill Lawrence, NPR News, New York.
This is the day that New York City would have hosted its annual marathon. New York City Mayor Michael Bloomberg canceled the huge race on Friday night after strong criticism that the city's emergency responders would have had to have been on hand as thousands of people raced. The cancellation came at the last minute, and many runners had already arrived. NPR's Margot Adler is in New York. She says thousands of racers turned out this morning anyway.
These are mostly, I think, people who would have run the marathon. In fact, you can see on many of them that white, you know, those white things with their number on it, and it says Ing Marathon. And so many of them actually have their marathon stickers on.
Other runners are racing through parts of New York with backpacks of supplies to give away. Voters in Ohio are lining up to vote early ahead of Tuesday's election. From member station WKSU, ML Schulze reports on how things are going at the polls in some key Ohio counties.
A line at the Starr County Board of Elections in downtown Canton at times stretched up two flights of stairs and down another before snaking out the door and down half a block. First-time early voters Tony and Martha DeMora welcomed it.
I really related to everybody in line today. It was fun.
And it did. It restored confidence to see that there are so many people, just different types of people, that decided to take the time to do it and make sure that it got done.
The scene was similar just to the north in Akron, where voter Neil Hess saw police trying to direct a long line of cars and decided to try again first thing Tuesday morning when the polls open at 6:30. For NPR News, I'm ML Schulze in Canton, Ohio.
And you're listening to NPR News from Washington. Two Atlanta police officers died last night when their helicopter crashed over a city neighborhood. No one on the ground was hurt. The officers were searching for a missing child who was later found unharmed. Witnesses say the chopper went down and struck power lines before it crashed. There's no word on what may have caused the accident. Some patients who got meningitis after injections of a contaminated steroid are coming down with other complications. NPR's Richard Knox says these spinal infections are hard to treat.
Several dozen patients have recovered from meningitis only to suffer a rare fungal infection of the spine. The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention knows of such cases in Michigan, Tennessee, Virginia, and Indiana. The complications are of two types. Some patients suffer epidural abscesses, accumulation of fluid around the spinal cord. This can require surgery to drain the fluid and remove infected tissue. Other patients have a more serious problem called arachnoiditis, an inflammation of spinal tissue that can cause intense pain, numbness, and sometimes loss of bladder and bowel function. Treatment may require up to a year of antifungal drugs. There are now 404 recorded cases of fungal infections linked to a Massachusetts pharmacy. 29 people have died. Richard Knox, NPR News.
Several thousand people turned out for a march in downtown Moscow today. Marchers seem to have two main points. They want President Vladimir Putin to quit, and they are opposed to ethnic minorities. The march was mostly calm, although some protesters set off smoke bombs while others made Nazi salutes. Rising Russian nationalism has been accompanied recently by racial violence in Russia and murders of immigrants. I'm Corva Coleman, NPR News in Washington.
Support for NPR comes from Charles Schwab, where investors can trade directly online in 12 foreign markets in their local currencies at schwab.com/globalaccount.
From NPR and WBEZ Chicago, this is Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, the NPR News Quiz. I'm Colonel Castle, and here's your host at the Chase Bank Auditorium in downtown Chicago, Peter Sagal.
Thank you, Charles. Thanks, everybody. And I know why you're so excited. It's because somebody told you that Wayne Clough, the director of the Smithsonian Institution, is going to be joining us later. But first, a big thanks to Mr. Drew Carey, who filled in for me last week. He did a great job. It turns out he did a better job than I did guest hosting The Price is Right. It turns out, this was a surprise to me, as the host, you are not supposed to bid on the items yourself. So tempting. And it was a beautiful dinette set. It had... Anyway, you're invited to call in with your best guess as to what we're worth. The number to call is 1-888-WAIT-WAIT. That's 1-888-924-8924. Hi, welcome to Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Hi, this is Greg. I'm from Bakersfield, California.
Hey, beautiful Bakersfield.
Yeah.
I once went to Bakersfield.
Oh, yeah?
By mistake, I missed a turn. That's true. But it seemed like a really nice place.
It is. It's great. I love it out here.
What do you do there?
I'm a paramedic, actually.
Oh, really?
Yes.
So you're out saving people's lives every day?
Well, on a regular basis.
Yeah. Do you lord it over people like I would? Oh, I see. You did some PowerPoint slides today. I saved a life.
They kind of discourage us from doing that in school, so I try not to. We try to be humble.
Well, no need to do that here. Nobody else is. Greg, welcome to our show. Let me introduce you to our panel this week. First up, a comedian who will be performing at the Newman Center at the University of Denver on November 9th. Go see her there. It's Paula Poundstone. Next, a radio hero who is the man behind the podcast Too Beautiful to Live, Mr. Luke Burbank, is back with us. And making her debut on our show, it's the author of Funny in Farsi and Laughing Without an Accent. She's currently working on a novel for tweens that is not about vampires. It's Firouzeh Dumas. She's right here. So, Greg, welcome to the show. You're going to play Who's Carl this time. Carl Castle, of course, will recreate for you three quotations from the week's news. Your job, identify or explain just two of them. Do that. You win our prize. Ready to go?
Okay, yeah, sure.
Your first quote comes from Pauly D. from the cast of Jersey Shore.
I can't believe it ruined Snooki's porch. Where am I going to kick it at now?
Okay, assuming Snooki's porch is not some sort of euphemism. We certainly hope not. What ruined Snooki's porch?
Well, it's probably Hurricane Sandy.
It was Hurricane Sandy, yes. So Hurricane Sandy dumped 8.5 billion gallons of water on Manhattan. Mayor Bloomberg leapt into action, took control. He passed a law limiting future storms to 16 ounces or less. The storm hit the poorest parts of the city worst, of course, but the wealthy also suffered. Vogue editor Anna Wintour lost power. She was forced to move into a $5,000 a night suite at a luxury hotel. And many of her models at Vogue had no food to not eat. Now, one of the things that bothered me as a son of New Jersey is New York got most of the headlines, but New Jersey got hit much worse. That's how it always is, right? If New Jersey sank under the sea, the headlines would be, New Yorkers must take ferry to Philadelphia.
I was in New Jersey the weekend before. I actually did three nights in New Jersey. I don't remember what towns anymore, but I had a great time. And let me just say, it was fine when I left it.
Yeah. Whatever happened in New Jersey, it's not Paula's fault.
Exactly. I just don't want to be blamed that, you know, somehow I changed the fronts. I made a low front.
No, because everybody knows based on Twitter that that was Obama.
Yeah, exactly.
Wasn't there a conspiracy theory that he actually caused it?
Yeah, Twitter and Facebook were sort of lit up this week with people who were putting forward, and some of them, I'll be honest with you, didn't seem particularly well-researched
theories about really
the president controlling the weather so as to effectively wipe out the, like, three states we know he's going to win.
Right.
You know, I enjoy I enjoy social networking as much as the next guy. But sometimes when you hear something like that, it's like Twitter is a dipstick. You know what I mean? It's like, you know, you put it in your take arena and you go, we're idiots.
Yeah. Pretty much.
We're just idiots.
That's the only marking.
Yeah.
On the Twitter dipstick. All right, Greg, your next quote comes from a very upset toddler in Colorado caught on a YouTube video.
I'm tired of Barack Obama and Mitt Romney.
Little Abby Evans was speaking for so many of us when she said she was sick of what?
The campaign?
Yes, the election. If America is starting to feel like an expectant mother 2 weeks after her due date. Except she's pregnant with twins, and the twins really hate each other. There's so many political ads on TV right now. I spent some time in a swing state recently. There's so many political ads on TV. You're relieved when you see an actual commercial for something you don't want to buy. It's like, oh, look, it's an ad for self-lubricating catheters. That's so beautiful. I'll buy a dozen. By the way, we should say that little girl in that video that went viral, she was the toddler upset about the election. She got upset because her mother was listening to NPR political coverage. Like, come on, parents, do not play this for your children. Don't you know that NPR is rated NC-55? Of course, Hurricane Sandy became fodder for the campaign this week. President Obama suspended his campaign so he could look presidential. He monitored the progress of the storm, which is basically what everybody else is doing, except he was wearing a cool Air Force One jacket. So, and Mitt Romney canceled his campaign rallies and instead held what he called storm relief rallies. They're a lot like campaign rallies, same videos, same guests, but Romney gets to wear jeans, I guess. At one of these Romney rallies, volunteers collected canned goods for hurricane victims. Romney staffers explained to attendees that canned is not just a word for firing people, it's also something that poor people use to hold food.
You know what I thought was weird was that he
what?
Suspended his campaign and then I don't, you know, I think that probably was the right thing to do, honestly. But still, it was like, well, because Obama suspended his campaign, then Romney suspended his campaign. But Obama had to go be president. And what did Romney have to go do? He had to go show what it would look like if he was president and there was a hurricane. He had to sort of do like Sears catalog poses, you know what I mean?
Greg, here is your last quote from a Star Wars fan talking to Vice magazine this week.
It's probably going to be a bleeping musical or something. There's going to be a singing Darth Vader, and it makes me bleeping sick.
That fan was upset that the next bleeping Star Wars movie would be made by bleeping whom?
That would be bleeping Disney.
Yes. Star Wars fans of all ages responded with shock to the news that Disney was buying George Lucas's film company and the rights to the Star Wars franchise for $4.05 billion. The 05 was for a spare Ewok. They worried, will a huge soulless entertainment conglomerate be able to make a Star Wars movie as terrible as the last three?
Yeah. You know, I say that's what happens when you wish upon a Death Star.
Disney promises to make a new Star Wars movie by 2015 and to expand the Star Wars presence in their theme parks. And the big daily parade at Disney World will now have Darth Vader in a float using the Force to strangle Winnie the Pooh.
But you know, Disney has this habit of taking ethnic characters and making them not ethnic. So I'm thinking Chewbacca, all that body hair, I think it's going to go.
Really?
Yeah.
It's all about manscaping. You really got to handle that, Chewie. You wonder why you're single and you're freaking covered in body hair.
Yeah.
Well, it's kind of a Middle Eastern. I mean, he looks like my cousin. So.
Carl, how did Greg do in our quiz?
Greg, you had three correct answers, so you win our prize.
Well done.
Congratulations, Greg.
Well, thank you.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
All right. Bye-bye.
Right now, panel, time for you to answer some questions about this week's news. Paula,
yes, yes.
Paula, according to the Wall Street Journal, our current political polarization is making it hard for people to do what?
Polarization is making it, I don't know, give me a hint.
It's not you. It's your policy preferences.
It's making it hard for people to date.
Yes,
get
date.
Together.
Yes,
okay.
As the election gets more divisive, single people are finding it harder and harder to reach across the aisle with their genitals. The journal talked to matchmakers who complained that people refused to date anybody from the opposite political party, despite the fact that they had so much else in common, like being desperate enough to hire a matchmaker. It is hard for Democrats and Republicans to date. When the check comes at the end of the meal, the Republican insists on going Dutch because she hates redistribution, while the Democrat wants to get everybody else in the restaurant to chip in a little for the meal. Those on the dating scene are urged to widen their horizons, let go of their prejudices. Why not pitch a big tent? Look at successful examples. Take Mary Matalin, who is able to love James Carville, even though she's a Republican, and he looks like an enormous, naked, snapping turtle.
Or, on a good day, Voldemort.
Support for NPR comes from NPR stations and CSX, transporting 2 billion pounds of goods to market by train and working to help move the economy forward. CSX, how tomorrow moves. The National Association of Realtors, an advocate for home ownership. More at houselogic.com/homeownership. And eSurance, an Allstate company, offering Express Lane, a tool that looks up users' vehicle information when getting a car insurance quote at eSurance.com. We'll be back in a minute with more of Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me from NPR.
NPR and WBEZ Chicago, this is Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, the NPR News Quiz. I'm Carl Castle. We're playing this week with Firuze Dumas, Paula Poundstone, and Luke Burbank. And here again is your host at the Chase Bank Auditorium in downtown Chicago, Peter Sagal.
Thank you, Carl. Thanks, everybody. Right now, it's time for the Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me of Bluff the Listener game. Call 1-888-WAIT-WAIT to play our game in the air. Hi, you're on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Hi.
Hi, who's this?
My name is Heather.
Hello, Heather. Where are you calling from?
I'm actually calling from Gravett, Arkansas.
Gravett, oh, wow. Arkansas?
Yeah, I'm close to Bentonville, which is home office for Walmart.
Heard of them?
Oh, sure.
And what do you do there?
Right now, I'm a domestic engineer.
I see.
And
well, good
for you. I also am a part-time student at our local community college.
Well, that's great. What are you studying?
I'm trying to become a phlebotomist.
A what?
Phlebotomist, one that draws blood.
Oh!
All right.
I didn't know there was a name for that business. I thought that was the nurse who hurts me. I didn't know that had a title. Well, good luck in the phlebotomy front. It's very nice to have you with us, Heather. You're going to play our game in which you must try to tell truth from fiction. Carl, what is Heather's topic?
There's a reason it's called the paper of record.
The New York Times has long prided itself on being the most fair, balanced, factual, and anally retentive newspaper in journalism history. And this week, our panelists are going to read you three stories of the gray lady going to absurd lengths to maintain that reputation for accuracy. Guess the true story, it'll win Carl's voice on your home answering machine or voicemail. Ready to play?
Yes.
First, let's hear from Luke Burbank.
As a couple, Jacob Siegel Wasserman and Lauren Wells Heffernan seem to have it all. Good jobs, good educations, the right kind of families. And so it seemed only natural that when they decided to get married, the New York Times got wind and featured them in its vows section. Things started to crumble, though, for the Siegel Wasserman Wells Heffernans. They both took each other's names while keeping their own. When the Times fact-checking interns started making some calls, Jacob, it turned out, had not graduated top of his class at Harvard, as he'd always told people, but rather had finished decidedly in the middle of the graduating class of the Cambridge Bartending School, class of 97. Meanwhile, Lauren's family, it turned out, hadn't made its money from her father's work on early versions of the Jarvik Heart, but rather his invention of the ShamWow absorbent cloth. Quite accidentally, it turned out, while trying to clean up spilled beer at the family's trailer home in Sandusky. Upon the paper's publication and seeing the mistruths exposed by the Times fact-checking, Jacob and Lauren quickly realized they were not so much in love with each other as the idea of each other, and promptly split.
Fact-checking a vows column breaks up a relationship. Your next story proving print isn't dead, it's just sleeping, comes from Firuze Dumas.
After the attack on the U.S. consulate in Benghazi, the New York Times dispatched its brave correspondents to find one of the men thought to be responsible, Ahmad Abu Khatala. They found him on a hotel veranda, scoffing at threats from the American and Libyan governments, bragging and sipping what the Times identified as, quote, mango juice. Not so fast, paper of record. A few days after the original story, the Times issued a correction. It wasn't mango juice. It was a strawberry frappe. How did the reporter confuse a flat orange drink usually served in a short glass with a pinkish-red frothy thirst quencher usually served in a tall glass with a bendy straw and mini umbrella? This watered-down coverage begs the question, what's next? Confusing a candidate's half-calf pumpkin spice latte with 2% milk? With a soy chai latte with no foam?
The Times correcting the record when it comes to an alleged terrorist's beverage. In your last story, but the New York Times pursuit of excellence at any cost comes from Paula Poundstone.
Not since Lois Lane has a reporter gone to such extremes to get a story in. Remember, she was never really in danger. She had Superman. When New York Times reporter Zahir Rab became privy to allegations of bullying and a look-the-other-way policy on the part of administrators at Patton Elementary School in Fishkill, New York, he enrolled. That's right, he enrolled. Although he is 25 years old, Rab is wiry, short, and apparently capable enough of passing for a second grader. I didn't like what I found, says Rab. The culture of bullying ran quite deep. From day one, my beard and mustache drew unwarranted snickering. And kids pulling my tie became as common as raising their hands to ask to go to the bathroom. The English teacher never liked me, which may have been because I corrected her grammar, but still. As I read aloud my essay on what I want to do when I grow up, I'm sure I heard her derisive laugh the loudest amidst the cacophonous uproar when I came to the part about my retirement plan.
The New York Times reporter goes undercover in an elementary school. That was from Paula. Your other two choices were from Luke Burbank. Fact-checking of vows entry shows that the engaged couple weren't quite telling the truth. And from Feruze, a story about how the Times absolutely had to get all the details right about an alleged terrorist, including his choice of beverage. Which of these is the real story about the Times doing what it does best?
Oh, that's going to be a hard one, but I'm going to go with the second one.
That was Feruze's story?
Yes.
Yes! All right, you've chosen that story. Well, we spoke to somebody who's familiar with this story.
I think strawberry frappe is more ridiculous than mango juice, mostly because of the word frappe, but also it shows such an intense dedication to the truth by the New York Times.
That was John Coscarelli. He's the assistant editor for the New York Magazine Daily Intel, talking about the smoothie correction. Congratulations, you got it right. Smoothie was telling the truth. And so was the Times. You've earned a point for Faruza, her first in this game, and you've won our prize, Carl's Voice, on whatever device you happen to want him to record it on. Well done, is my point.
Thank you.
Well done. Thanks for playing.
Thank you.
Extra, extra, read all about it. Extra.
And now the game where we ask important, knowledgeable people about things they know nothing about. The Smithsonian Institution is often called the nation's attic because of all the treasures crammed into it.
Yeah.
If that's true, then Dr. Wayne Clough, secretary of the Smithsonian, is the crazy guy up in the attic hoarding all the stuff. Wayne Clough, welcome to Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me. A pleasure to have you with us, sir.
Thank you very much. Glad to be here.
Glad to have you. So you were the head of Georgia Tech, right?
I was. My alma mater.
Your alma mater. You're an engineer.
I am.
And we understood that when you were at Georgia Tech some years ago, you did not do well as a student. Is that the case?
Well, I put it this way. When I came back as president, there were a number of faculty who were surprised.
Really? So what are the responsibilities of the secretary of the Smithsonian other than taking notes at the meetings?
Oh, me. Well, you have to make sure all those wonderful collections. We have 137 million objects in our collections, and that all those things are taken care of. And we have wonderful scientists here and scholars. We put on 100 exhibitions a year, and we have all of these wonderful things we do at the National Zoo. So my job is to kind of make sure it all flows smoothly and stays on track.
Who has to dust all that stuff? That's a lot of things. We were looking through the list of museums that comprise the Smithsonian, and there are so many of them. And we found that in addition to the big popular ones, there's the Air and Space Museum, of course, and the Museum of Natural History. But we also found that you guys run the National Postal Museum.
And while one of my favorites.
Really? So we actually wanted to ask you, while you're here, make a pitch for why on the next trip to Washington, instead of going over to the National Air and Space Museum and seeing the rockets, everybody should go to the National Postal Museum. Go.
Well, the National Postal Museum really is home to the biggest stamp collection in the world. And, of course, if you're really into it, you're called a philatelist.
That's true.
I'm pronouncing that word.
Right.
I don't date anybody.
That's not what that word means, Paul.
Sorry,
relax. Go on, Derek. So you have stamps. Stamps. All right. Stamps are good. I'm still heading for the rockets.
Yeah, but you can see Oni, which is the mail dog that, and he's of course mounted, as we call it. He delivered mail all over the country with his colleagues on the trains.
All right.
That's what they call it too, sir.
So I'm thinking about going to see the rockets and the spaceships and the planes. And you're telling me that if I go to the Postal Museum, I can see a stuffed dog.
So, well, he's very cute.
All right. Well, in that case,
Doctor,
off we go.
Dr. Clough, I saw this documentary a couple of years ago about this security guard at a museum who gets locked inside. And it's incredible what happens. A lot of the things come alive. He meets Robin Williams. How often does that kind of thing happen to you?
Well, I worry about that at night, let me tell you.
Have you ever like stayed overnight in the museum, hidden in a corner just to see if it's true?
Well, not quite. I've just taken, but we do have sleepovers, and so if you would like to go on a sleepover, we can arrange for it.
You know, I and my kids did a sleepover at the Great Field Museum here in Chicago, and they were very, very excited to spend the night at the Field Museum.
Absolutely.
And it's a fine museum.
But around 10 o'clock, when it was dark out and we were supposed to go to bed, and the exhibits were not, in fact, coming to life, my children felt ripped off. Legitimately, well, they were like, why are we here?
Yeah, we do have sleepovers at the zoo, and I can guarantee you the animals out there are alive.
All right. One of the great things about the Smithsonian, of course, is the collection of sort of modern cultural memorabilia that you have. I'm thinking of Archie Bunker's chair and Madonna's bustier. Is there anything in the museum that personally embarrasses you?
Well, I've always thought that the puffy shirt from the show was one of those things. I said, I wonder why we have that.
Wait a minute, I'm sorry.
From Seinfeld?
I'm sorry. The puffy shirt.
Yeah, from Seinfeld.
The puffy shirt from Seinfeld.
Huh. That does seem weird.
Have you ever thought of removing it when no one is looking?
Well, the word for it is called deaccessioning.
Deaccessioning?
That's what they call it.
Deaccessioning? That's when you take something out in the dark of night because it embarrasses you?
That's correct.
Yeah. You know, sometimes they call it stealing.
There are a number of celebrities and other people in America who probably think that their stuff should be in the Smithsonian. Do you have to deal with those people and how to figure out a way to turn them down?
We get offers of things periodically that we do turn down.
Can you give me an example?
Sometimes they're just too darn big. Larry Ellison wanted to give us his sailboat from the America's Cup, which was fabulous. But we just didn't have a place to put it that was so big.
Couldn't you, like, keep it for yourself, but pretend it's for the museum?
Yeah. No, because then you'd have to get rid of the puffy shirt.
No, you wear the puffy shirt when you're on the boat.
Larry Ellison's sailboat, won the America's Cup. That would be good. But there must be stuff that's just, like, ridiculous. Like, no, Mr. Trump. We don't want your hair. You should keep it, or whatever it may be. I mean, does that happen that you have to?
We had someone offer us a casket that they found on their property, and we declined that one.
They found a casket?
Apparently, and he didn't know what it was, but he was willing to give it to us.
Do you ever get the feeling people are just trying to unload their junk on you, like gently used crossword puzzle book?
No. It has to have, let's say, some redeeming characteristic to it.
I understand. Is there anything out there right now that sort of swimming around the culture, being used, becoming famous, that you hope to have in the Smithsonian someday that you've got your eye on?
That's a very interesting question. We are starting to really get into the movie business,
uh-huh.
And I'm a big movie buff, so I'd love to have some of the movies that are out there.
Like, can you give me an example?
Well, we've all got all of Clint Eastwood's collection now, and so I was thinking maybe his chair would be a good addition.
Yeah. I understand it talks, but only he can hear it.
So when you say you have all these movies, I don't understand what you mean. You have the movie itself?
No, we have a collaboration with Warner Brothers, and we have the Warner Brothers Theater here now, so we can have film festivals. And Mr. Eastwood and many other stars have been here for the film festivals.
So oh, sure. Do you have Paint Your Wagon?
Oh, I love Paint Your Wagon. What a great one.
He sings.
When he sings
it.
And Lee Marvin sings, Paint Your Wagon and come along. That should be in the museum for another reason altogether.
Maybe we can donate something from Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Oh, there's a good idea.
Yeah.
We'd love to have something.
Wait a minute, really? Because we recorded this, you know. We have it on tape.
We found a coffin just outside the...
Well, Dr. Clough, we've invited you here to play a game that this time we're calling...
America's Dumpster.
You run America's Attic, where we keep the stuff worth keeping, but what about the stuff that isn't? It turns out there are people out there who are hoarding things so weird even A&E would not stoop to broadcasting it. We're going to ask you three questions about collections of stuff no one would think to collect, and you'll win our prize for one of our listeners, the completely collectible Carl Castle voicemail message. Ready to play?
I'm ready.
And who is Wayne Clough playing for, Carl?
He's playing for Jess Goldstein of Minneapolis, Minnesota.
There you are. All right. Here is your first question, Dr. Clough. A man named Michael Lewis collects a very common item, one which most people don't value as much as he does. What is it? Is it A, broken shoelaces, B, moist towelettes, or C, money balls?
Oh, my God. Broken shoelaces, maybe that would be a good guess.
Is that your choice?
You were no, how about B?
You're going to go for it. Well, you had that sort of rising inflection. I didn't know if you were asking. You're gonna choose B, moist towelettes?
Yes.
Yes, it is, moist towelettes. Quote, no one can deny that moist towelettes are a vital part of the world in which we live, said Mr. Lewis. Sadly, the collection is no longer on the web. Next question. A woman named Deborah Henson Conant curates a kind of art collection. She is the curator of what? A, the Museum of Doodles I Made While on the Phone, B, the Burnt Food Museum, or C, the Museum of Interesting Bug Windshield Splatters?
I kind of like the last one. I grew up in the southern Georgia, and we had a lot of bug splatters on the windshield.
So you're going to go for that?
Yeah.
No, I'm afraid it was actually the Burnt Food Museum.
Okay.
Oh, wait a minute. There couldn't be a Burnt Food Museum if they haven't come to my house to collect.
Yeah. Well, you have to submit, Paula. It all started about 20 years ago when this woman was on the phone. She forgot about it. She was making some spiced apple cider on the stove. She forgot about it. She came back, and it had been reduced to a very interesting sculptural shape. And that's how it began.
Oh, wow.
So you have to submit things. Take pictures.
Some people just use cleaning.
Yeah.
For that kind of problem, as opposed to starting a museum.
You know what? He should meet the moist towelette guy.
I know. They could clean it. All right. Here is your last question. If you get this right, you win. A man named Graham Barker collects something that most of us throw away without even thinking about it. What is it? A, used Kleenexes. B, used meat dresses. Or C, belly button lint.
Oh. It's all gross.
Ooh. Oh, it's got to be C.
It is C. It's belly button lint. Yeah. Mr. Barker has a collection of three jars of what he calls navel fluff. It is, you might be relieved to know, entirely his own, 20 years worth.
Tell him not to send it to the Smithsonian.
Carl, how did Dr. Clough do in our quiz?
He had two correct answers, Peter, so he wins for Jess Goldstein.
Well done, Dr. Clough. So you've done a lot in your life. You've had a lot of honors and awards. How does this rank?
Well, it'll be a big line on my resume.
There you are.
For the next job.
Dr. Wayne Clough is the secretary of the Smithsonian Institution. The Smithsonian's new website is seriouslyamazing.com. Mr. Secretary, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Clough.
Thank you, Dr. Clough.
Thank you.
Armadillos, clever caterpillars, reproductions of the Cyclops, retina crystal blowing, automatic sewing, Venus on a shell, and other works of art, educated fleas...
In just a minute, Carl tries the Amityville Diet. Call 1-888-WAIT-WAIT to join us on the air. Support for NPR comes from NPR stations, and Charles Schwab, providing investors with financial guidance for over 40 years. Charles Schwab, talk to Chuck, 1-800 for Schwab. Chevrolet, maker of the Volt, stories and testimonials from Volt owners are available at ChevyVolt.com. And Pimsleur Language Programs, whose unlimited series allows users to study to play Bluff the Listener Challenge on a Nook or desktop using interactive software at Barnes & Noble Booksellers. We'll be back in a minute with more of Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me from NPR.
NPR and WBEZ Chicago, this is Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, the NPR News Quiz. I'm Carl Castle. We're playing this week with Luke Burbank, Paula Poundstone, and Firuzi Dumas. And here again is your host at the Chase Bank Auditorium in downtown Chicago, Peter Sagal.
Thank you, Carl. In just a minute, Get ready for a spooky listener limerick challenge. Carl is still wearing his Frankenstrime costume. I know, fine. It's Frankenstrime's monster. Fine, I understand. If you'd like to play, give us a call at 1-888-WAIT-WAIT. That's 1-888-924-8924. Right now, panel, some more questions for you from the week's news. Firuza, a Russian man refused to pay a $32 traffic ticket this week, and he made a good case. He said he didn't need to pay the ticket. Why?
Because he had no American money.
No? That was a translation.
Oh, this is in Russia.
This is in Russia.
Ruples.
So he got a ticket in Russia,
rubles.
And he refused to pay because he said it wasn't his car. He'd stolen it.
No. Just check the Mayan calendar.
Oh, because the world's going to end,
exactly,
so why should he pay?
Exactly right. The world's going to end at the end of 2012, so why pay the fine? The world will end on December 21st, 2012, according to the calendar of poet Maya Angelou.
This has been a real...
That is what they mean, right? And so, for this Russian guy, that means, why pay the traffic ticket? What are they going to do to him? You know, this excuse is going to show up more and more. I can eat whatever I want. The apocalypse won't care about the size of my thighs. The apocalypse is coming. I don't need to prepare for this first debate. Are you gonna plan for the apocalypse?
I can't wait, honestly.
Yeah.
I am so tired.
There really is a sort of change in the season of your life when you realize that you'd be sort of okay with it. And when I think about the world ending on December 21st, I think, that gets me out of a couple jams.
Yeah.
You know, I'm okay with that.
Luke, this week NPR was forced to deny a story about Morning Edition contributor Cokie Roberts. Despite numerous reports to the contrary, NPR is sticking to the story that Cokie Roberts does not what?
Visit Snooki's porch?
No. Visit some other place almost as embarrassing. The only hint I can give you is name an annoying casual restaurant chain.
I can name a few. How about I run down the list, and
please,
when I hit the one, you guys ding the bell.
Here we go. Go.
Applebee's?
Yes! You got it first off. The rumor was... Let me explain what happened. Sometime on Friday last week, a Twitter feed for Cokie Roberts popped up on Twitter, and the Emmy award-winning broadcaster had one thing in her mind, finding an Applebee's. Followers of the feed noted that she also seemed to think Twitter worked like Google, so she was entering things like Applebee's, Washington, D.C., D.C. Applebee's directions. Then tweets like homemade Applebee's and Applebee's dessert shooter recipe. So NPR denied that the Twitter account belonged to Cokie Roberts, but we want to double check. Joining us now from what we sure is an appropriate upscale independent dining establishment, please welcome Ms. Cokie Roberts. Cokie, hello.
Well, it's definitely independent. It's my kitchen.
I am so glad I didn't go with Hooters now that no cookies are on the list. I was going to make all kinds of jokes.
But trust me, I have never visited Snooki's porch.
Okay.
So right now, it's probably underwater for Snooki. So Applebee's. I actually barely had heard of Applebee's, much less been to Applebee's. I have 6 grandchildren. I've been to really disgusting places. Applebee's just didn't happen to be on their list.
I understand.
Yeah.
I actually did have to sit down before you called me.
Yes.
To think about tweets. Because
tweets.
I have never... Twittered.
It's only a matter of time, Cokie.
Yeah.
No, it's actually not, Paula, because I...
No, you know what?
No. I love you dearly.
I very much enjoy Twitter. I tweet... I will be tweeting about this conversation. I bet you money, and you can pick the number... but I would want to be in the neighborhood of $10.
That you will
eventually join in the big public swimming hole of Twitter. I really believe
if
that.
My grandchildren want to communicate with me that way.
I understand.
Because basically, I'm communicating with everybody else I want to communicate with already. It's
you have not
already.
Called me.
Huh?
So there you go. Ladies and gentlemen, Cokie Roberts. Thank you so much, Cokie, for setting the record straight about you and Twitter.
She is so the person who tweeted the Applebee's thing.
Coming up, it's Lightning Fill in the Blank, but first it's the game where you have to listen for the rhyme. If you'd like to play an air call or leave a message at 1-888-WAIT-WAIT, that's 1-888-924-8924, or click the Contact Us link on our website, waitwait.npr.org. There you can find out about attending our weekly live shows here at the Chase Bank Auditorium in Chicago and our upcoming show at the Nokia Theater in Los Angeles. And also be sure to check out the latest How to Do Everything podcast. This week, Mike and Ian tell you how to blow up a hurricane. Hi, you're in Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Hi, this is Mitch Handelsman from Denver.
Hey, how are things in Denver, Mitch?
Good, Peter.
Are they about a mile high, things?
They're just about a mile.
Just about a mile high. What do you do there?
I teach psychology,
uh-huh.
And I also play trumpet.
Do you really?
Yeah.
I have been learning to play trumpet again. I was a very poor trumpet player in my youth, but I'm relearning as
Great.
I accompany my daughter. Do you have any tips for me as a newly and a new novice? A new re-novice trumpet player?
Oh, just the usual stuff. Keep practicing.
I was hoping for some, like a shortcut of some kind.
Well, I could give you lessons, and you could go back to the way you were before.
That's true.
Really bad trumpet
player.
You could
regress. Welcome to the show, Mitch. Carl Castle right here is going to read you three news-related limericks with the last word or phrase missing from each. If you can fill in that last word or phrase correctly, and two of the limericks will be a big winner. Ready to play?
I'm ready.
Here's your first limerick.
Airlines charge for each knapsack and tote. Now I look like I'm fresh off a boat. I seem to be puffed because my pockets are stuffed. I have shoved all my clothes in my
coat.
Right! Airlines these days are charging as much as $100 per checked bag, but they can't charge you if you are wearing your suitcase. Sure, it makes you look like Grimace with handles, but you can stuff anything into the Jack2Go wearable luggage set, clothes, laptop, or if you really want to save money in the flight, your spouse.
I have taken to just wearing less when I'm gone.
That also works.
Like this suit will go for what? 4 or 5 days, right?
Right.
Yeah.
It's self-cleaning. It actually is its own ecosystem.
I just wear a ShamWow.
Here we go. Here, Mitch, is your next limerick.
Of new diets, I tend to be wary. But this new one's a wish from a fairy. A Halloween flick might just do the trick. I'll lose weight if the movie is
scary.
Yes! British scientists have introduced something that we're going to call the Halloween diet. Scary movies get your pulse going, and in turn your metabolism goes up, so you burn more calories watching them. A study of certain movies found that The Shining burns 180 calories, Alien burns 161, Saw burns 130. Men can lose weight by watching The Notebook, because halfway through, they get up and walk out of the room to find another TV. So, here is your last limerick.
Day-Lewis as Lincoln? Rejoice! But he's made a peculiar choice. The great actor speaks in short, high-pitched squeaks. He's using a really high
voice.
Yes! The eagerly awaited new Steven Spielberg Abraham Lincoln biopic is attracting attention. It's not because of the adorable alien that Lincoln adopts. It's because Daniel Day-Lewis, as Lincoln, in the trailer anyway, speaks in a nasally high-pitched whine. According to a historian, that is an accurate rendition of Lincoln's voice based on accounts from the time. It's true. Actually, we here at Wait, Wait, we think we're going to help scholarship. We got our hands on a recently discovered, very primitive, wax voice recording of Lincoln speaking. Take a listen.
47 years ago, our farms brought forth on this continent.
So, you know, I think that maybe Day-Lewis didn't go far enough in his...
I don't understand how they know what Lincoln sounds
like. Because people wrote about him.
He
was a very significant figure, and people said, well, his voice was very high-pitched. He had a very high voice.
Yeah.
You're such a skeptic, Paula.
They're playing the trailer for this movie a lot during football games, and I feel like, based on what I've seen so far, the movie should have been called Angry Beard Yellers. It's just a bunch of guys with beards yelling.
Are you talking about my native country?
Carl, how did Mitch do in our quiz?
Mitch, you had 3 correct answers, so I'll be doing the message on your voicemail or answering machine.
Well done.
Thank you.
Congratulations. Thanks for playing, Mitch.
You bet.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Now on to our final game, Lightning Fill-in-the-Blank. Each of our players will have 60 seconds in which to answer as many fill-in-the-blank questions as he or she can. Each correct answer now worth 2 points. Carl, can you give us the scores?
We have a tie for first place, Peter. Luke Burbank and Paula Poundstone are tied for first. They both have 3 points each, and Firuze Dumas has 2.
All right. So, let us begin with you, Firuze. You're in third place. You go first. The clock will start when I begin your first question. Fill-in-the-blank. Because of his position on climate change, on Thursday, New York Mayor Michael Bloomberg endorsed blank for president.
Obama.
Yes. On Wednesday, China put forward a proposal designed to end the conflict in blank.
In Ohio.
No, in Syria.
I like your answer better.
Because of his actions during the Jerry Sandusky scandal, the former president of blank has now been charged with perjury.
Penn.
Yes, Penn State. Because he refused to sign a letter apologizing for the failure of their new maps feature, an executive at blank was asked to resign.
Apple.
Yes. The California DMV admitted that it gave a driver's license to a man who said on his application form that he was blank.
Blind.
Yes. Because of low ratings, it was announced this week that CNN host blank's daytime talk show will not be renewed.
Oh, Anderson Cooper?
Yes. Responding to a call from concerned residents, police in Iceland arrived at the scene of an abandoned property and broke up a blank.
Ice fight.
No, a cat party. The headline in the Icelandic newspaper read, "Police break up cat party." Reading that, you think cat party must be a term for something else. Something involving Snooki's porch, perhaps. But no, it was a party of actual cats. Police found 2, possibly 3 cats at the scene, so even if it was a cat party, it wasn't a particularly good cat party.
Ain't no party like a cat party, because a cat party don't stop. I mean, that's common knowledge.
Carl, how did Firuze do in her very first ever fill-in-the-blank?
Firuze had 5 correct answers for 10 more points. She now has 12 points and has the lead.
All right. Well done. We flipped a coin. Paula has elected to go third, so Luke, you're up next. Fill-in-the-blank. Penguin Random House is the totally boring name of the new publisher created by the merger of blank and blank.
Penguin in Random House?
Yes, to raise money for hurricane relief, a telethon featuring Bruce Springsteen, Bon Jovi, and other musicians with strong ties to blank aired on Friday.
New Jersey.
Yes, this week a Chinese government think tank urged the leaders there to end China's one blank policy.
Child.
Yes, because of her appearances during Mayor Bloomberg's press conferences, Bloomberg's blank has developed her own fan base.
Sign language interpreter.
Yes, she's awesome. In the aftermath of Hurricane Sandy, Newark Mayor Cory Booker tweeted, quote, "I believe in you. I know this is a problem you can handle," to a person whose problem was blank.
Was running out of batteries on their Xbox.
No, almost ran out of Hot Pockets.
Oh, I knew it!
To defend his calculations, political pollster Nate Silver bet MSNBC's Joe Scarborough $2,000 that his predictions for blank are right.
The presidential election.
Right. 3 games on Tuesday night kicked off the start of the new blank season.
NBA.
Right. Rock stars are known for having entourages, roadies, and groupies, but this week we found out that Justin Bieber has a blank.
Personal wig assistant.
No, he has a tour hamster. You might have thought it was just an urban legend that Justin Bieber had a tour hamster, but no, it's true. The Canadian toddler has adopted a hamster into his entourage, making it the first time there's been a group with a hamster in it in which the hamster is not the cutest member. It's a perfect pet for him. Like Justin Bieber, the hamster is adorable, has thick, silky hair, and is prone to intersexual aggression and cannibalism. They have a lot to talk about. Carl, how did Luke do in our quiz?
Luke had 6 correct answers for 12 more points. He now has 15 points, and Luke has taken the lead.
Very well done. All right, then. So,
yes.
How many, then, does Paula need to win?
6 to tie, 7 to win outright.
All right, Paula. See if you can get that win streak going again. Here we go, Paula. This is for the game. In spite of the damage from Sandy, officials say there are no plans to postpone Tuesday's blank.
New York Marathon.
No, Tuesday would be the election. The marathon is Sunday.
Oh, sorry.
In the biggest gain in 8 months, private companies added almost 160,000 new blanks in October.
Customers? Jobs.
Jobs, yes, jobs.
This week, the Kremlin denied reports that Russian President Blank was injured while hang gliding with cranes in September.
Putin!
Right. When asked whether the San Francisco 49ers win on Monday restored team confidence, Coach Jim Harbaugh said Blank.
Yes, indeedy.
No, he said, there never was a question there. That's just a lot of gobble, gobble turkey. Just gobble, gobble, gobble turkey from giant turkey gobblers. Unquote. Because of the hurricane on Monday, Jimmy Fallon and David Letterman did their shows without a Blank.
They did their shows without an audience.
That's right. Cineworld Cinema in Nottingham, England has apologized to 25 families who attended a screening of Madagascar 3 for accidentally blanking.
Were poisoned by the popcorn.
No, they accidentally were shown Paranormal Activity 4 instead. 2 minutes of the horror film was all it took to make the parents grab their screaming children and literally run from the theaters. Said one parent, it was enough to scare them for life. The theater gave them all refunds and invited them to a later showing of Madagascar 3, which unfortunately just traumatized the children more than Paranormal Activity 4 had. Carl, did Paula do well enough to win?
Paula needed at least 6 to tie, but Paula had only 3 correct answers. So, with 15 points, Luke Burbank is this week's champion.
Well done, right, Luke. In just 1 minute, we're going to ask our panelists to predict how the 2016 presidential race will kick off when it begins on Wednesday.
Oh, Lord.
But first, let me tell you that support for our Chicago shows is provided by Hyatt Hotels in downtown Chicago. Booking information is at Hyatt.com. Support for NPR comes from NPR stations and the National Association of Realtors, an advocate for home ownership. More at houselogic.com/homeownership. The Skoll Foundation, supporting social entrepreneurs and their innovations to solve the world's most pressing problems at skoll.org. And Progressive Insurance, with more than 30,000 local independent agents. Information available at progressive.com. Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me is a production of NPR and WBEZ Chicago in association with Urgent Haircut Productions, Doug Berman, Benevolent Overlord. Philip Godica writes our limericks. Our house manager is Don Hall. Our assistant house manager is Tyler James Green. Our volunteer manager is Ray Teresi. And our intern is the Leah Menzer. Our web guru is Beth Novi. Engineers include Les Larchik and Mohammed Mao. Thanks to John Zajac at Chase Bank. BJ Lederman composed our theme. Our program is produced by Eva Walchover and Emily Ecton. Technical direction is from Lorna White. Our production coordinator is Robert Newhouse. Our senior producer is Ian Chillog. And the executive producer of Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me is Mr. Michael Danforth. Now, panel, how will the 2016 election start next week? Paula Poundstone.
Sarah Palin will put her family on a bus and take what is clearly a campaign tour, but will tell people they were just lost.
Firuza Dumas.
Todd Akin, 2016, the legitimate candidate.
And Luke Burbank.
The candidates begin the arduous task of securing that most valuable Justin Bieber hamster endorsement.
And if any of those things happen next week, panel, we'll ask you about it on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell
Thank
Me.
Thank you, Girl Castle. Thanks also to Paul DeBasso, Luke Burbank, and Firuza Dumas. And thanks to all of you for listening. I'm Peter Sagal. I will be back, I promise, next week. Is NPR.
Founded in 1842, Cumberland University has a long, distinctive history in Middle Tennessee. Today, Cumberland University is striving to create school leaders, offering a new cohort-driven Masters of Education in Instructional Leadership program. This unique 30-credit-hour, 14-month M.Ed. is designed for teacher schedules with online and hybrid course delivery, including face-to-face classes at Cumberland's new facility at Mount Juliet's Providence Center, 547-1310. See you in the M.Ed.
Timothy de Mumbrian started his life in Canada, descended from French nobility. He later became one of Nashville's first citizens, but much of his life remains a mystery, even to his descendants.
When I first started doing this, they told me, you worry about uncovering skeletons in your closet. Don't start the research. Of course, I haven't found nothing that I'm ashamed of or anything in the family.
The Life of Timothy de Mumbrian. That story Monday at 6:33 and 8:33 a.m. here on Nashville Public Radio.
Celebrate.
celebrating 50 years of community service and community support, this is 90.3 WPLN Nashville Public Radio, 91.5 WTML Tullahoma, and 91.7 WHRS Cookeville. You can find a complete schedule of all our programs and listen to a live stream of any of our program channels at WPLN.org. It's 12 o'clock.